Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement.
Came from the bottom, ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong, you act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
They done tore down all the PJs in my barrio. Gang units for worst case scenario. This might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging. Still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Being forced to climb instead of how your back heavy, you beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America? I done gave you all that I own, America. Took me from my mama so young, America. Locked me up and gave me your name.
America, 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 you know the black freedom movement constitutes you more conscious. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as the nation is trying to render us soulless, to wear our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the blood stained banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
lock me up and gave me your name, America.
We're certainly happy that you're joining us tonight. This is Dr. Mary Lee Bai. We're continuing from last week. We've got Judith. Judith, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, hi, everyone. Hello. My name is Judith Crawford. Welcome to Dr. Mary Lee Live. And we are having a part two of last week's show. And I was on last week, and oh my God, the show was amazing. And I'm so glad she asked me to speak because I wanted to make sure I was on here so I could, you know, listen to everything. And I can't wait to have the continuation of the season three. This is season three, and episode 136. Oh my God, I did not know that it was that long, but it's amazing. I've been on the show ever since Dr. Mary Lee started her show, and I was never disappointed about any guest that she had on the show. It was always a lesson to learn, right? And she like handpicked all of her guests, you know, to make sure that we all get educated with everything that is going on in this world today. I learned a lot from this show. Like I said, I've been on this show since Dr. Mary Lee started, and I was invited to, you know, to come on just to listen, and I just can't stop. So without further ado, I just want to let you all know that I'm so pleased with her business and what she's doing. I'm also involved, you know, in her business. She's always helping me with my business and doing phenomenal things. So tonight, I welcome everyone on the show, the guests, the speakers, and I would just like to say just a little short prayer, you know, for all the guests and the speakers. God, I ask you to touch the guests and the host and the co-host and give us all from this show knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Amen. So now without further ado, I would pass this on to Mr. James Cannon or Dr. Mary Lee. I don't know which one. I don't know if Dr. Cannon is on.
Okay. I will take it, and thank you so very much, Sister Judith. We are, as you say, we go back to the very beginning of the show, and I appreciate you. But I would like for you to share with our audience, your business, your vision, and actually where you are. When we first got started, there were no doors open. It was all paperwork. So why don't you please share with us where you are, your vision, and how you've progressed.
Okay. Right now, I have a restaurant. It's not a big restaurant, but it's decent. And I have it on the Quantico Marine Base. And Dr. Mary Lee had a whole lot to do with it because she worked with us so much from the beginning, you know, to get this restaurant. We had a couple of no's, a lot of no's, but we finally got a yes, and right now the business is doing well. It's doing very well, and like I said, you know, there's always little bumps and, you know, around across the road, and you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days, but we have more good days than we do bad days, and I thank Dr. Mary Lee for keep pushing us, you know, to make sure that we get what we need out of this business. You know, so again, thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, and appreciate you. And I know we're going to open up number two and number three of Family Eatery. That's the name of our business, Family Eatery on Quantico Marine Bay.
And thank you. I'm excited about it. For a few months now, the restaurant has been on the military base, Quantico, and which is a large, large military base. And to understand where she is from where she came, and as she said, all the no's that we received along the way, but look where she's at now. I mean, from at next, as you say, this is only the beginning. So we're on one day. So what is our vision? Every day. And she's making such a wonderful, I mean, great impact on the base and, you know, on all of her on all of her customers. She cannot keep up, literally cannot keep up. They're already discussing a larger space for her, and just kind of share a little bit about the food and how you impact the number one. Is it the general or somebody on base, you know, with your food to the point as to, you know, they're already asking for catering services,
yes,
for fine events, y'all. Fine events. I mean, this is beyond what we even thought about, right?
Yes, yes, yes. You know, it's amazing because when we got on there, when we were getting ready to go on there, a lot of people was asking us, what are you bringing? What are you bringing? And we said, you know, we're bringing Caribbean, American Caribbean. So we want to make sure we, you know, it's diversity, American Caribbean. And when we started there, this is our seventh month that we've been there, and we're looking to be, you know, to be there for another 7 years. And that's the only place in Quantico that has a American Caribbean place for. So the people are coming in, the Marines are just coming in. They're like, we were waiting for you. Where were you all our lives? Because we were tired of eating Domino's and sandwiches, you know, so they wanted some actual food. And last week I had a little, you know, little hiccup there. And when I came back this week, everybody was like, you know what I mean? But the restaurant was open, but I wasn't there. But people came in, they were like, where were you? Where were you? So it made me feel so good to know that the people really enjoy, you know, the presence and the cooking that we bring forth to the Marine Base.
And on that base, I think, what is it, about 40,000 or more families, Marine families, and,
yes,
you know, employees, you know, on the base. And so this is lovely, you all. And we're not just, you know, we're not stopping at the restaurant. Neighborhood Commerce is in line also to be located, you know, out with the CDC on every base as well. So thank you, Judith, for sharing. And once someday we'll have a huge event and you'll provide the food, you and your team. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You are most welcome. We're always open,
yes,
you know, for catering. We had about 5 or 10 catering jobs already. So, yes, anytime you're ready, I'm
here.
Oh,
my goodness. Wow, wow. That's,
yes,
great. That's great. Congratulations,
yes,
sister.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
So you all see what can happen just from persistence, just being, you know, not giving up, continuing to work, continuing to put out your best, continuing to believe and to trust in the Almighty. In our Creator.
Yes.
I always said, if you think it, if you can think it and feel it, it's meant for you. And
amen.
You never, ever give up. You just don't.
That's right.
No matter how you feel, no matter, you know, what negative thoughts come your way, in spite of your surroundings, in spite of what's going on with you, family, friends, business, whomever, financial, just want to continue to trust in our Creator, You know, I think of times when Sister Judith we would have our times on the phone, and it was like it was never ever going to happen, right?
I know,
and then it was
I
just
know.
Like suddenly, it was like suddenly,
oh
and yes. So God is really with you all. So just hang in here, and
yes.
and just believe in trust in whatever you're working on, whatever
yes.
you're doing,
yes.
because it's definitely in the stars for you. So we're continuing tonight, talking about Clutch the World with Marshawn Kinsey. We welcome you back. At age 23, Marshawn Kinsey's life was very far from simple. He had many challenges in life, and was raising his infant daughter alone. He spent some time in jail for an old ticket. Became homeless, was living homeless with his daughter, sleeping in a car, not understanding that there were some types of relief out there for homeless people. His main concern was not losing his daughter, and this went on for quite a while. And all of his experiences and bouts with the law and challenges with work has brought him to where he is today in operating a major outreach program and project that reaches not just the homeless, but, all areas in people's lives and, touch many, 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 many organizations across the country. It's phenomenal what Mr. Kinsey has done, along with his teams and supporters, and things that are coming up in the future that is already confirmed. And so we're welcoming Mr. Kinsey back this week for part two. Last week was just absolutely great, absolutely phenomenal. And so we want to welcome you back, and we want to welcome our guest panelists, Dr. Tyne and Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Long, as well as the MCI and the Funding Link panelists, Jared McCoy, who's been on here and been announcing, filling in for us along the way, doing whatever he can do. And so we appreciate you all. We appreciate, and of course, our tech team and all of our supporters throughout the years. When you dial in and listen and contribute, or just listen, or sign up online and listen, or you're helping, and we appreciate you. Without you, we wouldn't be here these 3 years. And Dr. Cannon, wherever he is, doing whatever he does, but we know he's busy. He's actually, it's amazing how he juggles things around. And sometimes when he's on, you'll hear noise in the background because he's literally doing two or three things at the same time. He is running something major out in California and San Diego, and it just happens to be during our hours, but he yet endeavors to try to get on. And we appreciate that so very much. The James Cannon School of Broadcasting, Radio and Broadcasting, TV as well, we've been talking about it, for now for more than 2 years at least. And so that is making is forming quite nicely, and we're happy about it. We'll be able to get the children shows. We'll be able to get everyone's shows going, and get your, as you go through the curriculum, then you will, everyone will receive a certificate of completion, and will be recognized. So, again, we welcome you, Mr. Kinsley, and so let's get ready. Let's see. I think we'll just have you to come on and pick up where we left off last week, and then we're going to go to Dr. Moncrief, because I know Dr. Moncrief had there were a number of questions that were on the table and concerns, and so we left off with a lot of questions, but I'd like for you to come on now, and Mr. Kinsley, in your own way, and we welcome you. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you so much for inviting me again. I'm very excited to be here again. I know last week was very exciting. I was, happy that people enjoyed the conversation and that we can really open up the doors to some serious, real, down-to-earth conversation on what we need to do as a people to kind of move forward and kind of get ready for the new landscape that I think that is ready for us. So I'm excited to be here. So if anybody had questions, I'd love to get some questions answered and start asking questions, and I can kind of go into other things and, things of the nature I feel will be beneficial for us.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. So, Dr. Moncrief, we're going to get started with you, and we're going to ask you to come on and recap a little bit, and we're going to ask Dr. Long to come and recap and pick, and let's address some of these questions. I want to remind everyone, which I always forget announcements, but hopefully next week we're gonna have an announcer to announce certain things. But tap your phone. Remember to tap your phone, one on your phone, to join the conversation, and you will open up your line. So, Dr. Moncrief, welcome, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Mirley, and I really love the testimony that opened up your show. I got questions for her, but I'm going to focus on tonight. My mind just went to, she should franchise, But, okay, so I'm going to focus on tonight's topic. And I appreciate Marshawn from last week. I had, tons of questions on just about everything that he touched upon. There were so many different topics. We talked a little bit about incarceration. We talked about historical black colleges. We talked about reparations. We talked about identifying ourselves and being proud that we are descendants of enslaved Africans, and we should be seeking reparations for us, and not being ashamed of us. We should be able to step up for us. And we talked a little bit about Section 8. We just talked a little bit about everything. But we talked very little about Marshawn. I had tons of questions about him, his daughter, the experience that he had, as being homeless with his daughter living in a car at times. I forgot how old he said his daughter was when this experience started. And I don't know how old his daughter is now, and what she's like now, and the impact that experience of being homeless had on her. I'm a pediatrician and an internist by training, but I very rarely get to talk to anybody about, and particularly the children, about the impact that it had on them. So I'm hoping that Marshawn will talk a little bit about that tonight, but, whenever it rolls around to me, I got plenty of questions for Marshawn. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You have the floor with your questions now, so this is your time. Thank you. Go ahead.
So, Marshawn, if you could just start, and if you don't mind, I should ask, Can you tell us about, you know, your experience with your daughter and your daughter's experience and where she's at today?
Yeah, I could talk a little bit about that. You know, it was, I think at the time I was like 21, 22 years old. So I was really young. When I went to pick her up from her cousin's house, in a sense, and I got her that day, my cousin actually went and picked my daughter up. And again, you know, she was breastfed and, you know, just used to the breast, so I could not give her a bottle. She wouldn't take a bottle. So, you know, I was trying to figure out a creative way to, you know, be able to feed her. And, you know, I found a way to, you know, I thought the balloons was here. If I get balloons and I kind of put some warm water in there, I could pretend that it's a breast and she would be able to drink it. So I just learned little things like that that worked for me that allowed me to kind of get to those things. And then she eventually got took onto the bottle. But I got her when she was 9 months. So when I had her at 9 months, you know, by the time we got about a year and things got going in there and said she was talking very, very early because, you know, we're homeless and she 9 months, we had to communicate. So, you know what I'm saying, my daughter was talking like 10 months, you know, she was having full conversations because in this time that I had her, it was like, you know, I needed her to communicate. You know, I know what it's like on a bus and she got to use the bathroom, you got to get off the bus and wait for the next bus to come. So I get all the aspects that came with that because I had to go through all those things as she got older. But once, you know, I was a guy and they see me with a girl, it became really easy because I had a lot of strong women around me. You know, my mother was strong and I had a lot of cousins that seen that happen. So, you know, I was able to kind of get a lot of leniency in a sense because, you know, people seen what I was trying to do. I was offered to give it up for adoption and some people were like, man, we can watch her, take her in there. But it was like I just couldn't see myself giving her away and setting that up in place. And so, you know, she went to school, did very, very well in school, got a lot of awards in school, and she have a grandson now that's in the place. She has her own place and doing pretty good for herself right now. So it was, you know, I thought that the mother not being a mother would affect her or not having a mother in her life would affect her a little bit. I think that did play a little part in it, but outside of that, you know, they did kind of have some sort of relationship, especially when she got into her teens, and they started to build some kind of bond between there, and that was, you know, acceptable for me. And, you know, so from outside of that, it was just, you know, I think it was an experience, I would say.
So I think I hear you saying that your daughter maybe didn't really realize the experience of being homeless because you had all these support in your family over the years. Is that correct?
Well, the sense was I had to make it like we're not homeless. So you got to think, if I don't have nothing to do that day and I'm with my daughter, we at the beach the whole day, having fun, making sand candles. So she wouldn't even thought homeless was there because she's waking up to the beach every day. Mm-hmm. So you know what I'm saying? I go get food to eat and set this up. You could be on the beach. And this was a time when you could make fires on the beach. This was the, you know, early 2000s when you could have certain things on there. So, you know, we would, you know, there were times when I needed to go. I could always go spend a night here and get a night here and get a night here. But outside of that, you know, you made the thing kind of fun. You know, you will find places where you can go camping and pay a certain amount of money. You can get the camping thing set and people see your situation and made it easier for you. So in a sense, it really wasn't like she got the comprehension of being homeless because it was kind of like, you know, a lot of that time that we spent there before we got into the shelter, we stayed close to the beach. And so for her, it was like waking up every day and seeing the beach when you're like a year old. Like it was just, you know, capture the day. I'm going here. I'm picking these things. And so we spent the day doing that. So I don't think it really affected her as much because I tried to navigate it in a way to where it just seemed as we were just having fun, like an adventure in a sense, you know?
And by the time she started school, did you have a permanent place to stay or were you still
Once I got out of the transitional house, once I got into the homeless court and went there, and, you know, that was on L.A. Times. So that actually was featured in the news, and I didn't expect that to be on the news. So when that was featured on the news, that got me an opportunity and a connection to go to Upward Bound Housing in Santa Monica. And so I was able to go there, and I was the only male to get housing there at the facility because it was all women there. And so it was like, well, we never had – this is the first time a single father is here with his daughter. So once I was able to bring her into that atmosphere, because you got to stay there a year, and you got to think it's like 22 other apartments there and all women. With me having a daughter, I started getting the real strong support just within a house within there. And then from that, they stabilize you, help you get another low-income housing when you leave, and was able to kind of grow from there and started to build the foundation from there. That's when I went to Long Beach and started to crush the world and open up the community center that was featured on Fox 11 News, because after those experiences, I wanted to take everything I had took from all that and make sure I could bring it back to the community. And so that's what I did with Crush the World. That was on Fox 11 News, I think, 2004. So I was homeless about 2001. Yeah, I was homeless about 2001, and I was on Fox 11 with the Crush the World community site by 2004.
Okay. And the others, I spent a little time, very little time in California, but I worked at a clinic in Huntington Beach and Santa Monica, through the University of California Irvine experience. Anyway, there weren't a lot of black folks out there when I was there. As a matter of fact, I can't even remember seeing a black community out there. So your experience out there, was it different in that capacity? Were there any black folks out there?
I didn't see at that time in 2001 a lot of blacks out there. There were some in the shelter where I was at, of course, and you know, outside of that I didn't see it. But it was very pleasant, honestly. You know what I'm saying? Where the places where there wasn't at, I didn't get any kind of really negativity from the Europeans that were there. I can honestly say it was kind of pleasant. Very pleasant. They actually would drop off. I mean, they were bringing cars, because in Santa Monica, you know, you could come and add donations. And I mean, if these people were coming there bringing cars and everything. I mean, it was, you know, every Tuesday and Thursday they would have donations where the people throughout the community would come, and these are all people, and they were giving some amazing things. I mean, you had, you know, everything you wanted to have for a child or for a baby, you were getting directly from these people in Santa Monica. So it was a very enlightening experience in seeing how the community could come together for people who are in that thing. You never really get to see that unless you're really there, you know. But it was amazing, the support they got from the community around them.
Yeah, being homeless in Huntington Beach and Santa Monica is probably a different experience than being homeless in Compton. I'm glad that you were able to, you know, have that experience with your daughter. If you had to be homeless, you know, and I'm sorry that you had to be homeless, but yeah, I can see that being a little bit more supportive than being in Compton. So.
I started off in downtown Los Angeles. You know, I was staying in the Main Street Hotel in downtown LA about 2001. This is when you could stay in hotels like $300 for the whole month. You know, this was back when LA, downtown LA, was downtown LA. But it was really raw. You know, I mean, people were, you know, they were giving birth on the elevator, so I had to go. I had no choice. I could have stayed there and kind of got, but the atmosphere was just, it was inconducive for me to go there, so I went to the beach.
I think you were a wise man to do that. And after you got out from out of being in jail, I don't know, prison or jail, and walked into that situation where you had to raise your daughter by yourself. Did you have any more experiences with being incarcerated?
No. No, I mean, you know, my only background is just tickets. You know, this was a time when the Blue Line just came out. You know what I'm saying? So when the Blue Line came out and stuff, you know, I'm from Compton, so you know, we grew up kind of like jumping on the Blue Line. And you know, at this time, they would just give you a ticket, and they give you a ticket. But unfortunately, I let that build up to like 4, 5, 6 tickets. So I met one sheriff who was like, "Man, you got too many, bro. I can't let you go." You know what I'm saying? Like, you got 7 chances, bro. So I had to go in there and work those consecutively. positively. You know what I mean? Right when I was a job, you know, right when I started working for the Census Bureau, you know, right there in 2000, you know, so it was just like, that was a trigger that was like, man, because from that point, you know, that was the census paying like $10 an hour. And that was huge back in 2000, you know, when you're making that kind of, so when you got a part of the census, you were like, okay, I'm good right now. And so when I had that month, I was just ready to have my, you know, getting ready to put myself in position. And then that happened. And that just sent everything spiraling. And so that's why, you know, I had a really different anger. Like, man, the shit, that one sheriff, man, has changed my whole life. That one dude, you know what I'm saying? And so those are the kind of experiences we as black people go through as we go. And that kind of holds a lot of animosity. You know what I'm saying? Because it just be like that one thing, that one chance. If I could have just got away for one more month, I would have stacked up. But who knows if I would have went back? I would have got caught in driving. Who knows what could have happened? So it happened and sent me through what I needed to go through. I went through those experiences, and I think it made me definitely stronger.
Thank you. I'm going to pass the baton over to someone else, but thank you, Marshawn. When it comes back around to me, I got a few more questions, but I'm not going to hog.
All right. Thank you so much. You know, and so I just like to kind of jump in here. You know, when you were saying, and for any one who may have any doubt about a child talking at 9 months old. You know, I had a family member who was, her son literally talked at 10 months. Before, I mean, there was never ever any like small words, and he just started talking. And so, you know, because I experienced that, it would, and in case anyone on here has any doubt at all that a 9-month-old can talk and in full sentences, I witnessed it. And the child was only 10 months old, and he literally talked to his mother. And so I wanted to kind of insert that. And then, you know, we're talking about the child having feelings or about being homeless. Well, you know, that took my mind to Dr. Wayne Dyer, and whom I listened to and read his book for many years, where, you know, and he was a foster child up until like 9 or 10 years old. And he talked about how, you know, that had no impact on his life. He didn't, I mean, it's not like it bothered him as a child. He didn't even understand, you know, that he was in foster care. You know, he was away from his parents, and particularly his mom. Dad wasn't in his life anyways, but separated from his mother, but he would see his mother, but then in foster care. And so this is something that I know that Dr. Long can talk about or touch upon, because, you know, I find it absolutely amazing. I mean, even when my own growing up, you know, we lived in a house, you know, in a big house. We were a big family. So, you know, Daddy always got us a huge house. Well, not until, you know, I was an adult did some of our friends and people from the community, you know, I share it with me, they looked upon us as being wealthy because we lived in a house, and everyone, for the most part, lived in, you know, in housing, in public housing, or in an apartment. And on even when we were in Detroit, on the east side, you know, our neighbors were majority white. I can remember when my mother would do ironing for the white people on the block. So that's why I hate ironing today. I won't iron a thing because, I mean, only time I iron is when I'm making something. You know, I do tailoring and make clothes as a hobby. That's where I find it's like therapy, you know, to just, you know, tailor a man's suit or something like that. And I'm gifted in that respect, and that I never took any classes for tailoring and didn't learn anything from a class. God taught me. But so the only time I iron is when I have to, when I'm making a, you know, making clothes, and because I had to help my mom back then, and I can remember, I'm telling you, when you talk about how white people torture you, they would put this starch on these clothes, and they would roll them up real, real tight and put a whole lot of clothes in a basket for $1. For $1, that's all they gave my mom. And I would help her, of course. And, you know, just the evilness and the wickedness of what they do. And then sometimes they come and they look over the shirts, you know, their husband's white shirts. And if they see, like, even a little bit of anything, then they want to not pay for the whole basket of clothes. I mean, she didn't have to do that. She was doing it because she wanted to. And so I'm like, you know, okay. How long are we going to do this thing, work at home thing? But anyways, I just wanted to mention that.
Sure.
So, you know, like they didn't even, like Wayne Dyer says, like children don't feel things, don't understand things or comprehend. And so, you know, I can understand where your child or your daughter, you know, I don't know if it had an effect or not had an effect. Whether afterwards it did or not, I don't know. That would be for Dr. Long. And I can also relate to, you know, back in the day where they would pick on us as black people, you know, for jaywalking. You can give tickets for jaywalking. You get tickets for anything. And these tickets would end up being criminal offenses, so they use this in order to, you know, mark our records early in life, and you could even go to jail for, you know, if you didn't have the money to pay these tickets. Because I can remember uncles and their friends, you know, talking about these jaywalking tickets and stuff. Okay, so much for that, Dr. Long.
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Again, I want to applaud Mr. Marshawn Kinsey on all the work he's done on the West Coast. As I, you know, listened last week and today, I just wanted to clarify some things too with Mr. Kinsey. Number one, I wanted to know: did you have to go through a particular court-ordered procedure to, quote-unquote, be reunified with your child? And the reason I'm posing this question is because besides the various places I work in my private office in Southfield, I do a lot of independent contractor work still with the Third Judicial Circuit Court in Wayne County in the neglect abuse docket. And I'll say for sure when it comes to mail, seeking custody of their children, it is pretty, unfortunately, rare. But even, let's say, if they are seeking contact with their child, reunification, if you will, there's a process that they have to go through. And I won't say that it's a unstressful process, which would include parents having to get a court-ordered psychological as well as psychiatric evaluation. So that was my first question. And with that question, I've encountered some males who, despite having to be frowned upon by the courts. And when I say by the courts, I'm not just talking about a judge or a referee. I'm talking about the Department of Human Health, DHS, which is connected to CPS when it comes to a particular full caseworker, social worker, DHS worker, et cetera. And one thing I find myself doing, particularly with you know, this vehicle of using telemedicine, which, you know, I've mentioned before, it's not my favorite by any means, particularly with cases like that. You know, I'm always encouraging males and females, particularly African Americans, that don't let some DHS worker, don't let some foster care worker, don't let any type of worker impede you from being reunited with your child. So, you know, those would be my opening statements because, unfortunately, you know, these type of cases are just, you know, like running water through the system. And usually when it comes to family court, family juvenile court, family division, you know, we usually just hear about different crimes that are being committed in the community, but there is a significant component of that court system involving kids. And if you guys remember during the Trump era, there were some kids who were taken, the refugee kids. You know, Michigan played a, I don't know what word to describe, a very manipulative role with the lives of those kids. And there are some stories I can share related to that, that you would be stunned in terms of how certain agencies played pivotal roles in kids still being separated from their parents. So those would be just some questions I have for Mr. Kinsey right now.
Yes, I had two good elements. Our guest was favorable on my side. My child's mother was from Belize, and so she wasn't. She actually overstayed her visit in a sense, and so she was kind of here and still staying here. So when she kind of took off in a sense, I was, you know, I was able to go, you know, once I was in the shelter and in that part of the things, you know, she had told me previously that she was in labor for 18 hours. So you being in labor for 18 years. So I kind of sensed that, you know, she probably wasn't coming back. And so I was able, you know, I was suggested, you know, to look at what was called abandonment and find an abandonment, you know, and with the fact that to put the course in a place to go find her for me. You know, in a sense where it was like, well, look, I'm fine abandoning because I don't know what she had. If you know what she had, then go get her because this, that was set up in place and put that in there, you know. And so what that allowed me to do was for them to go out there and look and kind of search for her and kind of put that together. And so in a sense, it kind of sent her on the run. And with them, after I think with a certain amount of time, they had to try to search and find her. And if they couldn't, it would automatically give me that part, you know. And so when she decided to come back again, she would have to come to court and file against the abandonment against that. And then that would, she would be able to go. And so that's what happened later on of, you know, years, about a decade later. But that's kind of how I was able to kind of ratify the situation once I got into the out of the shelter and everything.
Okay, yeah. You know, the only thing I would add is, again, you know, emphasize that that whole docket, and I wish either Judge McCree was on tonight and get some insight in terms of how that works or how it doesn't work. And as you guys know, I'm the mental health director for the juvenile detention facility, and we do have a significant amount of kids who are, quote, in juvenile, not for any crimes they committed, but again, it's for, like Mr. Kinsey stated, it's for abandonment, it's for neglect, and there are instances of abuse. But for their, quote, unquote, safety, they're now in the facility in which I'm seeing kids who've done some definitely more horrendous crimes than you can imagine. With the shortage of foster care homes, particularly African-American foster care homes, adoption, and even now in Michigan, I'm not sure how it is in California, residential facilities for kids who are in the neglect and abuse docket, they are few and far between. So, I mean, we'll have kids downtown going on 18 months as they're waiting for the, particularly with COVID, with the court the courts to proceed in terms of some form of reunion, reunification. But again, that's why I applaud him for his efforts, because unfortunately I see a lot of negativity when it comes to males, and I'm talking about black and white males, particularly African-American males, trying to do the best they can with all these court orders, and there are a lot of court orders when it comes to reunification. But again, thanks for your efforts, and keep on pushing.
Yes, well, our goal right there is, as we begin to do that starting in California, our objective is to take those kids, the ones that you talked about, and like the young lady that was speaking earlier with the restaurant and her franchise, is to make sure that we train those kids through Dr. Lee's project and her institute to be able to take over those franchises. So as we start to train them now while they're in these facilities, and that's what we want to do, and that's what we need to do. We need to go and give them education while they're in these facilities, so as they turn 18 and get ready to get out, we have these jobs, we have these franchises and these businesses for them. A lot of times they don't have a mom, they don't have a dad, a grandparent that they can go and kind of get that extra assistance, or, you know, those Christmas times and these things fit. You know, sometimes that's hard for them. So we need to be able to create that base and be able to set that in tone, even if we have to create some of them and partner with some of our women just on Pen Pal program. So we wanted to have a Pen Pal program with some of our women who are in prison right now, maybe doing 6 to 7 years in prison right now. They need to be on the phone calls with some of these young women who are in these programs as pen pals to help them with advice, to help them with certain things so that they won't end up to where they at. So we need to create sort of a project between these organizations where we start to work that, because we can't keep on depending on the system to do that for us. That can't keep going. So we need to go and attack it full fledged, where we go and say, look, this is the program. We have a franchise program. This is the franchise, a couple of the franchises we want to go, and we're going to train our youth on this, so when they turn 18, she has a food truck, you know what I'm saying, a catering truck that she already has ready to go around with the different foods, and we have the same thing that we do for our young men when it comes to different franchises and businesses that we have set up for them. So that's the whole goal, is to make sure that we have them set, utilizing those franchises, and then work the other systems out as we press forward. You know,
absolutely,
when you talk
great
about countries like, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, go ahead. You got the organizations, and I know you have a lot that you want to share tonight about, you know, the various different projects. And so why don't you go ahead. You can go ahead with that right now. But I would like to interject here regarding, you know, training the children. Part of Ms. Judith's plan, part of the plan, actually included training those who are in foster care, you know, the children doing an on-the-job training program. So, you know, I just kind of want to mention that, because we're really here all are on the same page. So you can go ahead now and share, you know, everything else that you've got going and that you want to share with us tonight. Thank you, Mr. Kenzie.
You know, yes, you know, as we start to look at our probation and our jail problems and things that are happening, you know, we got to remember people like Annie Dupin, who literally locked up thousands and thousands of black men with false tests and false DNAs, and that was like 60,000. So when you think that one person can do that in one city, if they had that in every city or in just certain cities, that would really get us in prison a lot. So we really got to not take that in position when we talk about what's going on with us as black people in the prison rate and all these things, because we never measure in Annie Dupin and how many Annie Dupins existed throughout the United States of America when we talk about these people who are locked in prison, and everybody there is probably there because they did something violent. You know, it is record that thousands have been locked in jail for no reason, just by the simple fact that they were black. And that's thousands. So, you know, that's one thing that we need to address and look at too. But, you know, as we begin to press forward, you know, our goal is to simply become self-sufficient. And utilizing the organizations that we have around us and merging that. Our major gap right now for us is really just economic development, which we can do. And I think the problem is
we just keep forgetting that it's been destroyed or confiscated from us. It's like when you talk about Tulsa, when you talk about Moulin Rouge, when you talk about hip-hop and our culture, a lot of these things, they say, well, black people can't create this, they can't create that. Well, we do create it, but what have we ever to be profited off of? Name something that we created and we're able to profit off of without somebody coming to take that. And so I think that's the hardest factor in for us to understand and get in place. And so that's one of the major things that we're looking at building and making sure we start from our youth, that we had a set firm foundation. So our programs are dedicated to ensuring our partnerships that we have with our youth, that we can create a strong bond. So one of the things we'll be doing is, like I said, with the small businesses, we take our businesses into the diaspora. And so with that, we'll be able to work, we'll be working with the New Future Foundation. I don't know if anybody's really familiar with Creed Mother Dolores Blakely, but she has been going to the United Nations for, oh man, the last 40 years or more, really advocating on behalf of us in the diaspora as well as all as Africa. And, you know, with this being done, we now have an opportunity to get a direct access to what we need to get done and address the issues that we need to have changed directly through the UN. We ain't got to go through all this other stuff that's going on here in the States now. So, you know, through the newfuturefoundation.org, we'll be able to go. You can see the work that they've already been doing for decades and with the UN, so that now we can take the concepts and everything we're saying and be able to build these programs within the diaspora, so that we can go and take these programs to Haiti, and our kids that we train here can now train in Haiti and train in Jamaica and train in Brazil and to train in Africa and train throughout the diaspora. So when we're talking about franchising, that's fine as we begin to franchise here in the States, but we open our horizons and we start to franchise on a global scale. It's no reason that we shouldn't have 5,000 businesses in Korea. So it's no reason why the young lady who spoke earlier shouldn't have 5 businesses in Korea, 5 businesses in Mexico, 5 businesses in China, 5 businesses in Japan. Their businesses are in our communities and have been there for decades, and we have supported their businesses and their swap meets. And so it's time to reverse the chain of command, in a sense. You know, hey, so the objective of what we're doing is for our people. It's like we need to get down to the realness of it, and just, you know, understand that we create partnerships with each other and we create trades with everybody else. We got to do the same thing everybody else is doing. And when we do that, we simplify that, because when we create a trade with someone, that's my corporation and your corporation coming together and forming a corporation that's going to do whatever it is that they come together. When we're dealing with anybody outside of our people, and when we're dealing with our people, we deal directly, we can do partnerships, 50%, 50%, 30%, 40%, however we want to do. So we start to separate and start to get a hold on who we are as a people economically. You know, and this is sort of the vision, it's sort of the goal as we press forward in there. So some of the things we wanted to make sure we had and secure that we collab, you know, that we control. We went and we partnered with DAMN, and what they're going to allow us to do is they're allowing us to have I'm going to load it up real quick. They're allowing us to have the dot hip hop. So everybody's familiar with the .org and the .net and the .coms and all those parts. But, you know, we have the company Digital IAMN. We have that company that we're partnered with that has now got and took the dot hip hop, now that online. Because if we put that online, we know what's going to happen. Everybody else is what? Going to go get the dot hip-hop, and the people who created the dot hip-hop, we won't be able to market it or put it out there, because everybody with money will sit up there and just buy all our names, all the things, and we have no peace. So what we partner with them is to ensure that we own the majority of the real estate in there. So when we release the dot hip-hop, we want to make sure that we have a right to have the ownership, so that we get it in our names, in our business, in our culture. If we created hip-hop, everybody who has a record label, all the African Americans who work in the music industry, all those parts who want they dot hip hop, we couldn't just release that and say open up, because, you know, every time we do something, everybody else feels like it's a taste of theirs. So we have to go secure it. It's a shame we have to do it this way, but we gotta figure out a way to get this to our people where we can go purchase they dot hip hop without everybody else trying to snatch it up before we get it. So these are the concerns as we pressing forward. We also went and partnered with a company called Celeb Island, because, you know, we black people, we celebrities. the difference with CelebIslian.com, if you go there, is this is on African servers. These are not on American servers. We want to separate ourselves. It's okay for us to have fun and be on American servers and putting that in place, but with CelebIslian.com, we can now reach out to our people within the diaspora. We can create the networks, create the chains, and create the things that we need to have, and we don't have to worry about what we say, what we doing, and what we putting on somebody else's server. Oh, you're getting cut, you're getting blocked. We on African servers. So this is way over on our motherland that we don't have to worry about these things and start to set up place as we press forward. So our goal right now is to create the whole objective that the self-sufficiency that we need is here. We don't have to go looking for it. The self-sufficiency is here. What I'm able to do now, partnering with our organizations, because, you know, the major objective I have in California is I'm the commanding officer of the FAU Mighty Forefront. And what this is in the Mighty Forefront as well, what this gives us to do is gives us the Smart Whites Community Reinvestment Coalition. I'm bringing that straight out of Compton. With that part, that gives me all the California cooperative districts of California, which I can have about 44 districts cooperative by May 25th, 2023. So, you know, as a founding director in the African Union Smart West Community Reinvestment Coalition of the FAU and things of that nature of LA County, we now have the opportunity to go and take everything we're doing and utilize all these reinvestment funds starting in California to progress everything that we're trying to do. Everything that we're trying to do. So in a simple plan is as we press forward, we take this, we create our package is already set. So what I'm doing now is getting our people to understand what we have and what we have to do and how we can move as a people to go ahead and press forward. Because a lot of times we can spend time saying we need this is happening, this is wrong, this is what we need, or we can spend time making the change and going for the change. The thing with these organizations that we went and get is, you know, you got a lot of organizations, there's a lot of religion, there's a lot of things within our people that we all cherish so much. So what I went to organizations and said, look, I'm just trying to feed a starving kid. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what, we don't need to discuss anything. Will you help me feed a starving kid? We don't have to talk about religion. We ain't got to talk about where you from, what the thing is. Let's just feed these starving kids. Our kids are starving. So can we feed them so that future is right there for them? And so people like, on that level, we don't need a unity. All we united for is what? Is to feed these starving kids. If we can unite on that purpose, we can press forward with the full-scale agenda on the things that we're doing because we have the opportunity to set in place. We have to let the world know that these are ours. These are certain things that we have, and they start to see, like, okay, this is where the power lays at us as a people. You know what I'm saying? Setting the authority in and controlling the authority. This is ours, and we want this back. We want this back. So we got to first start off to control that because everybody thinks everything we do belongs to them. And so we can't come up in a country that we built and hung on trees for, a country that we were tall and feathered and burnt for, you know? And so I try to tell people, understand that that's what we have to deal with as we press forward. So we have to move in an exclusive way, but we got to do it transparent to let them know, look, man, these are our boundaries. Could you please respect that? And that's just the goal. Could you please just respect that? So I'll wait and see if there's any questions or anything as well, you know, before I press forward.
Any questions? Okay, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Kennedy, I just wanted to know, with this coalition of things that are happening outside of the U.S. and whatnot, you know, has your organization been able to kind of figure out the things like multinational corporations and all do, so that there could be things like, you know, funds and things set aside for these processes to, you know, kind of gain some sort of, you know, foundation of their own, right? You can do the work and then, you know, make the profits and things like that, but when you funnel and channel those things through different channels, that's another one of those things that tends to not work out really in our favor. I mean, they do that to whole countries. And, you know, it's an exclusive gain that certain companies really get to benefit off of, while those who are trying to start and trying to reach across borders tend to suffer from. Have you had any experience or any troubles with that?
there's always a different trouble that comes in when it comes to us being able to progress. And I think that's because we haven't, as African Americans, curated our own international relationships, you know, that we can build off of and take advantage of the international relationships. There are a lot of places that our culture is really, really highly loved and religiously loved, you know, and so we need to be able to captivate off of that. And so some of the things that we want to do is, as we're building up economically, our goal is to create the economic ability with the countries that we deal with. So in persistence, you have Taiwan. Taiwan, you know, their youth are taught nothing but, you know what I'm saying, semiconductor work. They just taught nothing on semiconductor. That's all they specialize in. Semiconductor. They specialize in this type of training and thinking, you know. So our goal, we take 1,000 of our young men, African Americans, and we send them to Taiwan for 4 years. This is all y'all do. Y'all focus with them and y'all train and learn these skills that they have, so that now we got 1,000 men that's able to go and take and learn how to make semiconductors. And now they take these skills and we send, 100 here to Jamaica, 100 here to Haiti, 200 come back to the space, 100 go here to this part of our, this part of the world. And now they're training these kids on what they learned there in Taiwan. And so we do the same system as we press for when it comes to our animators and seeing how it works. We want to be able to go to Japan and see how y'all make the boost, what kind of machines y'all using to do this, so that when our artists and our guys come up with our own animation and we start to produce art, which is called VUSA, you know, we want to be able to say, you know, we have our diaspora animation that belongs to us. These are our artists, and we went there, we trained, we learned how to do different arts, we learned how to utilize it to bring the graphics together and understand that. So we send youth out there to train, as well as the different businesses that we're doing out there. So we start to create these different networks so that our youth have these certain skills. You know, one of the things we have to implement here, like in our in the space for our youth, is we have a program called the Monopoly Program. And what this does is we're allowing the youth to start to do marketing promotion for small businesses. So, you know, the small businesses that exist here, and you know, they go and say, for instance, a hamburger stand. So a youth will go to the hamburger stand, they will create their own fish burger with fries and a shake for $5.99. Now, when they go, they will make their own flyers, they make their own promotion, they make their own music with that. Now they can go partner with a Latino, Hispanic guy, an Asian person, and learn how to do it in their language. So, you know, everybody loves their social media. The kids are so good on their phones, the social media, the cameras, so they'll be able to make these commercials. They'll be able to make the flyers. Now, most of the high schools have, 2,000-3,000 students in the high school? So when these youth make these flyers for these different businesses, they go to the school, you know what I'm saying, and they pass these flyers out. Like Monopoly, you have a kid that you have all these car lots, and you have, 100 cars on a car lot. You have a youth go and make a commercial for this car, for this Lexus, for this Toyota. He makes a commercial. You sell the car for, $15,000. A king walks away with $1,500 of his sales for making that. That's a benefit to him. That's a different business. Now he knows how to market. Now he knows how to sell. He's learning these different skills and putting that together. So these are the things, you know, he's going to get another youth that's good in graphic design and say, hey, I got this company that I'm just marketing with. I'm trying to get this graphic design. And now that young youth is making graphic design. And so these are the elements that we need to do, utilizing this to promote our businesses and at the same time our youth are getting necessary skills to press forward. You know, Solution City. Solution City.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Okay, so we have a young man on the phone on the line tonight who has Mr. Bourne Leonard, and I really would like for you to come on and share your entrepreneur experience, what you're doing, and but I do need you to tap one on your phone so that we can get your line open. So if you would just tap one on your phone so that we can open up your line, we'd like to hear from you. Mr. Bourne Leonard, please tap one on your phone. We'd love to hear about your business. Okay, in the meantime, I'm going to ask Mr. Kinsey to go on. I know you have a lot to share.
Yes, you know, there's the 50th anniversary of the National Black Political Convention scheduled for October 21st through the 23rd, 2022. That's going to be at Essex County College in Newark, New Jersey, and that's going to be put on by the city. We want to make this probably one of the opportunity for us to really be able to talk about, meet with all the businesses, meet with the corporations, meet with all of the different delegates and the churches and everybody that's set. We need to make this event October 21st, 23rd, the event that changes everything that we want to do. We put together, and from this, we can structure everything out and have a system in place. You know, right now with the recession that's going on, it's like, you know, oh, the recession is coming. We got black farmers out there. It ain't no recession for us. All we got to go grab and complete our partnership with the Black Farmers Association, which we're finalizing. So this way, that as this recession hits, it shouldn't affect us. We have to stop allowing whatever affect them to affect us, because we have the networks, we have the solutions. They there. Not like they're not there. The support is not there. So what they need, we need trucks and we need drivers to get that food to the churches and that garden to the platforms out to the churches, and the people can go buy it from the churches if we have to. Buy it from the barbershop. Barbershop's on every corner. We figure out a way to make sure our distribution is set in place with our black farmers and stuff, so we don't have to take this punishment that they say coming. Why we got to take it? We didn't ask people. Have to understand, this America is not the America we asked to come to. They brought us here. So the dream that everybody say, oh, the American dream, we had to build that. It wasn't given to us. You see, everybody comes and they taste it and they get it and it's given to them. They get the experience. Oh, yeah, you have to fight and fight, but it's easier to fight here. It's not as easy when you take what you have to do it in your own country. No disrespect. But after the bloody summers and the bloody summers and all the times we've been killed and murdered for civil rights, shot and murdered and killed, they haven't seen eyes on the prize. Tell them, man, we lost our language. A lot of people, they say it's racist for you to tell me to not speak my language. Do you know we were murdered and killed for that? We were murdered and killed for reading. So how is that racist when somebody tell you to go, they chopped your head off yet? Then you can call them a racist. Discriminative, yeah. A little prejudice, yes. But racism is all words. Just like anti-Semitic is their word, racism is our word. Too many of our people hung on trees for everybody to have the right to use that. And that's how we can never fix this racism problem with the Europeans and white people, because everybody's out there utilizing it. So if we did stop using it, everybody else feel like they had a right to use it too, when they ain't never been hung with as many trees by the millions of us. You get told to not speak your language. We got killed. There's a big difference. They say, well, 100 years ago, you know, the Indians, but they just took Indian land for the pipeline couple years ago. What do you mean you're not invading Indian territory no more? You can't go to the gods and say that. It doesn't work that way. You just took Indian land to put an oil pipeline through. You've been doing that since the 1700s, 1600s. So tell me that you changed. Y'all act like the European woman didn't have to fight for her rights. There's something called woman rights. This is his mother. This is his daughter. This is his grandmother. She had to beg him for the rights. Who was the first employee, the first female employee in this country? What she looked like? She didn't get paid. What she looked like? The first nanny? Before they got their civil rights in the 1900s, who was working? See, people don't like when you talk like this about the people.
Yeah, they don't like it. And then what I find interesting is, you know, when we talk about, you know, when you mention about and I'm feeling you, the passion, you know, and I feel the exact same way. But when you spoke about, you know, they're taking our language. I mean, That was, I mean, they killed us, they hung us, they did everything. I mean, to take our language away so that we could not understand and speak to each other. People, we got hung and killed just for speaking to each other in our own language. So that's how we have lost our history. And then we're criticized, you know, they take the Ebonics. I mean, so many topics in here. Then you deal with the criticism of Ebonics, you know, say, oh, you know, like we don't know what we don't speak correct English. I mean, we're not even speaking our own language. There are, and I truly believe in my heart that there are certain English words that we've been given to speak that no matter what, like I know there are certain words, I don't care how hard I try to pronounce certain words, I cannot. It just, it will not come out right. You know, it'll come out like slurred or come out, you know, they don't come out right. And it's because it's not our native tongue. It's not our native tongue. And we've been taught and trained, and no matter what we do and say, that there's certain things that we're not going to get rid of, that we cannot get rid of. And I understand that. I understand that. And, you know, you bring so much knowledge here and passion. You know, I'd like to hear more about, I'd like to, for you to explain the value that the event coming up in Newark in October, and I do want to say the Neighborhood Commerce and the Dr. Mary Lee Live Show will be there, and we will be doing a show right out of there that day, that during that time. And so could you explain the significance and the power of this event that's happening in Newark?
Yes. This, again, is the 50-year anniversary of the National Black Political Convention, and this is a time for us to be able to use this, for us to take everything to the next level. In a sense, everything that we need, everything that we're talking about, all the workshops, all the corporations. We don't, like I said, when you talk about corporations like Coca-Cola and Pepsi, name one that's a black-owned business. Now, a lot of times they say they exist. There's a lot of black-owned businesses, but they're not household names. If I go anywhere in the world, I say Coca-Cola, everybody know what that is. So this convention, we need you. You know, I got too many young men who, like, I want my corporation, but I can't name a black-owned corporation that they can kind of follow. There's no map. Where's the end game? Because the end game is either it's been sold, snatched, took it, messed up, or something has happened to it. The end game, from Motown to now. No end game. So for us, we need to figure out a way to make sure that our youth have that end game, and this convention is what's going to set the tone for that. So that all these businesses that exist, all these corporations that we know are black-owned, that are doing a lot of great, amazing things, our youth need to know you exist. So this convention is going to help us get that done in place. The lawyers. Everybody can be a football player, a basketball player. We need a top 10 lawyer team so that we can say, here is our lawyers right now that's going to run everything we need to do to get set, that's going to go in here, and these are our leadership for our lawyers. We got 10 of our top 10 lawyers that set up in there. This is like our Supreme Court. When we got issues, what's going on, these 10 lawyers can come get all the information they need, and they can go to America, they can go to the UN on behalf to get everything done. Where are those 10 lawyers at? We need to. Show up. We got all these issues with leukemia and things that happen as health work with all the black issues. There are a lot of issues that just affect African Americans. We need 10 doctors that just do nothing but focus on just that. Whether they work at the HBCUs, wherever we go to set them up, we need you there so that we can designate you, put your name, set that up so everybody know these are our top tier doctors that's going to focus on our health stuff. There's too many diseases and stuff we're out here that we have that we're getting prescriptions for that we don't make. So when things shut down and they say these prescriptions are over, we die. We're not making a prescription. So when they say time up, not giving up prescriptions, what happens? So we need those doctors in place. We need those prescription guys in place that set up in there. I know the top things, the major top issues that prescriptions that African Americans need, what they have. We need those prescriptions in place. We need those prescribers right there set in place so we can create the herbal franchise, whatever herbal medicine, whatever it is. We need all of them to meet so we can get all those doctors and all those medicine guys all together and sit back so we can create that top 10 tier of doctors that's going to focus on what we need to do to create the medicines and create the things for us so that when this recession hits or something goes wrong like it has always done, because every time we come, they go, they bomb like they did in Tulsa. So to make sure we don't have that problem, we create a self-sufficient system. So here is our prescriptions and our medicines already dedicated to make sure we're in place. This is the convention we do that at. Who's going to be our top-tier teachers to set up a program? Where's our literature and our authors and our books that's going to make sure these are the books that our black women and black men need to read? We need an organization structured in place. Dr. Cannon is perfect for that. He's already an author. Setting that up and reading that shit and making sure every book he writes is something that needs to be read. And then what do? We need every black man to read those books. If you don't read those books, what do? We go get the black women. We say black women, every black man that reads this book, we're going to give him a patch. He got, what, 6-7 books? We give him each a patch for each book he read. If he ain't got this patch, don't even look at him. He ain't got that patch. He ain't learned nothing about his community. He ain't learned nothing about being a man. He ain't learned nothing about this. So once we structure that in there, it don't matter how much money he got. He don't know nothing about his people. Why are you giving him the type of deck? And we set the chain and change the chain on the way we need to do it. With all due respect. We force the hand that we need to do to make sure our youth have, like I said, I just want to help feed these starving kids. That's it.
That's wonderful. So that's called the 50th year anniversary of the National Black Political Convention. And it's also connected to the UN, right?
Yes. Yes, we'll be partnering with the Youth Foundation. Crema de Blakely will be there representing. So we have what's called the Crema de Sanctum. And with the Crema de Sanctum is going to be a community sanctum as a global diaspora relations and women's rights sanctuary. The Crema de Sanctum will have facilities located throughout the diaspora, each with a lead Crema mother as a support for pregnant women, will also be a priority as the sanctum will assist providing access to pregnancy support, family classes, post-pregnancy, living adjustments, assistance, as well as like WIC facilities throughout the diaspora. There will also be family programs to promote healthy living for their children. So we're going to create these hubs under the Queen Mothers so that we have this set. So that now with these Queen Mother gardens, they're going to be places where girls can just go relax, have a spa, just talk, just get away, and have this set. Our people, like I told you, our women didn't even keep their virginities in the 1600s and 1700s. You think the master was letting her get 13, 14, 15? Our 18, we didn't have no 18-year-old virgins running around in the 1800s, 1700s, early 1900s. What year did she start being able to be her, to keep her? You know what I mean? So these are the things that we want to establish and understand that they know. Well, our people have been through a lot of stuff, you know, and it's been carried on because you know what people have been through. And people say, oh, well, it's not transgender. It's still happening now. They was killing us in the 1900s, and they're killing us now. The problem with the thing is, like, everybody's like, well, blacks killing blacks, blacks kill each other. Like I tell people, everybody kill each other in their own country. Everybody do it. We're not doing nothing different than what they're doing in every other country. Because if you go to any other country, wherever they are, they're killing each other. Remember, this is our country. So we're doing the same thing they do. The problem is people think, well, because you do it, you can do it. It's just like, you know how we had that relative thing? I can say what I want to say about my cousin, my relative. You can't. And that's the boundaries we need to set. I can say, do whatever I want to my person. You don't worry about it. Don't worry about what I do. You can't do it. No, you can't do it. And that's the problem. They keep throwing that at us. But if you go back home, I guarantee you, pick it like we pick it. Go march like we march for freedom. In some of these countries where there's no freedom, they ain't giving you jobs, and you coming here for it, go march and just start like we did and got shot and killed for ages, for a whole movement. Decades shooting and killing, shooting and killing, shooting and kill, shooting and kill, fighting, 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 shooting and killing. Like I try to tell people, this was no real war in Africa. They ain't conquerors. They had sticks. They came with guns. They came with guns. You take all the guns, weapons of mass destruction away from us right now, and this is nothing but fist and knuckle up. Nobody would treat us the way they treat us. With all due respect, there's no guns, there's no weapons, no mass destruction, it's just hands. They wouldn't treat us the way they treat us. And we got to use that power and authority that God already gave us to make sure that my people, because the thing is they say, you say some things that may hurt other people's feelings, and I try to remind them, you know, back when Hulk Hogan, had his son had a car accident, and the guy was hurt, and they recorded his conversation on the phone call, and they were like, "Oh, Hogan, that's horrible what you said. You couldn't do that." And Hulk Hogan said something so powerful that shut everything down. He said, "Look, before y'all heard that, someone was contemplating suicide. He wasn't in the right mental place. I was saying whatever I can, whatever I need to do, whatever I have to build my son up. And I'm going to do the same thing to build my people up. Just tell me I'm lying. My people are growing my head like, man, we need mental issues. We need this. We need this. We need each other. That's all we need. We spend too much time seeking it from man. It's nothing problem, nothing personal with Black Lives Matter. But running to our sons and daughters, with all due respect, if we don't motherland, we came from Africa, running to our sons and daughters and saying, my life matters. There was a time in the 80s, time in the 1900s, time in the 1600s, the 1700s, 1800s, there was something called the omnipotent God that we would take that energy to. We took all this energy burning and fire and whistling, and what if we used that same fire for our prayers? And we had used that energy to pray to God for all those years. And all that energy went to the heavens and not into the streets, burning everything down. Where we have been? So we made sure we took our energy to the God, and we didn't care about what man wanted. Because man can't do nothing. They ain't helped us. He didn't help his woman. She had to beg for it. Tell me who didn't have to fight for rights in this country? His own wife, his own daughter had to beg him for the right to just live. Still to this day, she's fighting for certain things. And you think he don't give it to her? And he won't give it to his own mama? With all due respect, nothing personal. But we got to wake up. We got to wake up. It's not like we're lying. So, you know, I want to make sure that we have that ability to press forward with that same energy. And like I said, this conviction is the energy that we need to press forward so that we have our own foundation set in place. It's nothing personal, but our kids are starving. Our people are getting abused out here, and we're highest in homeless, the highest in unemployment. There's no reason why there should be no time for change at all.
This is great. We're going to come back around to Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Long. You know, I'm excited about everything that's going on and what you're doing, and I'm just grateful to be able to contribute what a little that I can contribute and be a part of this change and a part of the legacy building that we're doing. So, you know, we've been trying to get this young man and his entrepreneurship business on. So we have to get some technical people to come in and try to fix whatever's going on. Hello, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah,
hello.
Yeah, I was... Yeah, I've been on the line, and I've been trying to get through, so I'm not sure if someone had to let me in. But, yes, my name is Bourne Leonard. I have the pleasure of being the nephew to Dr. Longs. And as you said, I currently I'm the owner-operator of a small business. It's a clothing line based out of the metropolitan Detroit area. Basically, what our brand motto is about is, you know, just helping, you know, people achieve self-actualization and overcoming adversity, you know, and basically just, you know, navigating through this world and, you know, the challenges that we face as minorities, blacks, or just as a people in whole. So I do appreciate the time and just basically hearing the dialogue. I'm a little upset that I missed the last session, and just hearing Mr. Kinsey's story, you know, I can attest to, you know, the struggles of basically, I'm not going to say necessarily that I was a single parent, but just basically battling a court system was, you know, pretty much what I've done or did, you know. Actually almost like the entire first half of my oldest child's life. I have four children, one boy, three girls. My oldest, he just recently turned 18, graduated from Cass Technical High School. So that was the biggest challenge, basically, and the biggest hurdle, you know, basically having a child early age, out of wedlock. I believe I was similar age as Mr. Tensi. Probably, I believe I was actually 23. You know, met this young lady, and just don't want to get off to, you know, the depths of it, but met this young lady. She was in the neighborhood, you know, that I was in or whatever. So we kind of hit it off. Everything was, you know, essentially initially going well. So I got to the point where, you know, just discovered that we were not fit for each other. We just had different religious beliefs. So we were at that point, you know, we were unevenly yoked. So basically just giving you a quick back, you know, history of how the brand actually got started. It was actually formed from that, you know, as I said, we were not married, but it was still a union, you know, it was my girlfriend and whatnot. And if things would have worked out, we probably would still be together, but just different beliefs, different upbringings, and, you know, like when I speak on this, I kind of get a little, you know, emotional just because of what I, you know, experienced and what I dealt with trying to, so to speak, break these generational curses. Growing up in a household, I always had a male presence. I have two older brothers, and I always had a father figure, being a, you know, stepfather in the home, but I never had my biological father there. And him knowing where I was, you know, and basically just the struggles that he and my mother had, and the stories that you hear one side of the story, you hear the other side, yada, yada, yada. So basically, just trying to break that generational curse of not having the biological father present, and then these systems that are put in place to, you know, continuously divide, you know, the black families and household and pull the father out, yada, yada, yada. So, like I said, it's a lot to my story. But back to basically how the brand was formed, it was formed off of basically me being young, having a child, and that child giving me a sense of hope at that point, you know, being in the inner city, just trying to navigate through life and, you know, navigate with this burden on your head that, hey, I grew up without my father, you know, but, like, I always had strong male present. You know, that kept me on the, you know, straight path or whatever, you know. And it's a blessing that I could say this now and, you know, I just think back on how things could have been if I didn't have, like, that support group or whatnot. So basically the brand was created, you know, from the birth of my oldest son. Company is called Birth Clothing Company. Birth is actually an acronym, means born into responsibility through heaven. So it's not necessarily, it's not a religious brand, but it's basically a brand, you know, I feel a purpose. You know, we all have a purpose here on earth, you know, and as far as me, mine fell on, you know, being a responsible, not just a responsible parent, but a responsible adult, you know, for my child at that time, and even now, still, you know, 41 years old, still, you know, trying to navigate through the world and be responsible adult for my family and my children, you know, and whomever else that, you know, I can help out. You know, I feel it, you know, it takes a village, and, you know, I could attest to, you know, I appreciate Mr. Kinsey. Like, I love your energy and just hearing your message and, you know, what your foundation is about, you know, it's getting my juices going too. But yeah, so my brand is basically set up to, you know, hopefully once we get to the point where we're more financially stable and I can really pour out into the community is to go back and, you know, hopefully be able to connect and grab some of the youth before we lose them to systems that are essentially set up to divide us, to break up the homes or whatnot. So, you know, early on, I was, you know, going to the front of the court, you know. Actually, I worked for a pretty large company in the downtown area, and I was actually going to work and going to court at the same time. A lot of team members didn't know that, you know, on these lunch breaks or brief breaks, I'm going across the street to the, you know, county building in front of the court building, you know, for court hearings and things of that nature. So early on, I was doing that without legal representation. I'm trying to go in there and articulate myself in a way and plead my case on how I'm a good father and how, you know, it's my right to be in my child's life, yada, yada, yada. But when you're dealing with another individual who could also, you know, have come from a broken home or vindictive, I'm not, you know, I don't want to really say she was a bad individual, but at that point we're in this system now, and it was just like, hey, I can get some money out of this, you know. So it became a money thing, and I didn't have a problem with, you know, supporting my child, but I didn't want anyone to have to dictate how I should go about doing that, you know. So going in there and trying to plead my case, yada, 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 and first, you know, 4 to 5 years, pretty much, as you probably heard from other people, I got the shaft. You know, it just, as far as the custody arrangement, I didn't have custody and parenting time, and it was limited. You know, I would actually only see my child probably once or twice during the week, 3 hours on Wednesday, Friday, 12 to 9, and it just got to the point that became my reality, that became the norm, and I actually accepted what was presented to me. And all this time, you know, I'm just trying to show his mother, hey, I'm a good guy, you know, I'm not a bad guy. I want to, you know, I'm literally fighting for my son. And the other family was fighting against me, so it was just like, I'm trying to be in my kid's life, and they're trying to keep me away from them for reasons that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because, like I say, I'm not a bad individual, and for somebody that wants to be present, it's just like you would think, hey, what? That's the right thing to do, you know. So, but when you get these systems that, you know, like I say, are set up to cause division, and somebody thinks, well, hey, I can get a check, you know, then it's pretty much all about money. So that's kind of how my situation played out. So the first, you know, like I say, first half of my son's life, it was hell. It was pretty bad, you know, not seeing him, you know, actually going down for my parenting time or visitation and getting denied, laughed at in windows, doors closed on you. You get the police involved, and they tell you, hey, it's a civil issue. You have to go back to court, yada, 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 and you actually have documentation saying that you should be there. So, like I said, I don't want to get too, you know, far off, but things actually start looking up for me when I was able to retain an attorney. Very expensive, but at that point, you know, just by me being able to retain an attorney, the tables drastically changed, and I was able to actually get joint custody of my son just from having another, you know, just having representation, you know, somebody that's kind of familiar with the system, or so to speak. And in the same eye, you know, things with his mother took kind of like a turn where she, you know, I'm not going to say she was, she had some some challenges with some substances, or so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And from that, Child Protective Services were getting involved. They actually reached out to me while I was at work. And, you know, there were allegations of neglect and abuse. And all in the back of my head, I know my son wasn't being abused, but her support just started turning just because of the things that she was doing and the individual that she was in that present time. So by me having legal representation, things just started looking up for me and working out in my favor. So back to the brand, that's actually how Birth was created, you know. Like I said, the name is Birth, Born into Responsibility Through Heaven. My family, that's my great pride in being a father, you know, and also a black father in these times. And like I said, I work for a very large company in the downtown area, and just going into that corporate environment, it's a strain on me also. I was just actually talking to my uncle earlier, and he's telling me that I need to get more involved in my craft, and I'm like, you know, I'm juggling a lot. You know, it's kind of a lot to juggle, and just being transparent, you know, I also have my struggles with some mental illnesses, you know, currently struggling from anxiety, depression. I really don't even know how it feels, but just being transparent with you guys. So that's why I was a little hesitant to get on and speak, because at the same time, you know, it's a touchy subject, you know, and what I'm currently dealing with at this time, just trying to, you know, navigate through, you know, the obstacles of, you know, life and the challenges and all the adversities that we're faced with, you know, it's kind of like you kind of just want to chill out at times. And, you know, I told him I just wanted to be like a fly on a wall in a sense and just take it all in, you know. But, you know, he wanted me to speak, so that's kind of like my little intro. Sorry if I'm a little long-winded, but that's my intro. Like I said, currently operating small business. Our whole goal is basically to, you know, help any individual, actually, not necessarily, you know, children, young adults, but just any individual, help them achieve that, you know, identify what self-actualization really is, what it looks like, and just let them know that there is and there are opportunities out there. You just have to, you know, put one foot forward and put that other foot forward and just, you know, take the initiative to do it. And, you know, the roadblocks, the hurdles, the obstacles, everything, it's by design. You know, they it's by design harder for us. But, like, with community, support one of each other, and just positive thinking, you know, we can kind of, you know, we could break these generational curses or these systems that are put into place. We can, you know, take them down or just restructure them, you know, just so it's more of a level playing field, and, you know, our children coming up will have a better opportunity, you know, at, you know, this American dream that they tell us about. So yeah, that's my story, my spiel. Appreciate, you know, you giving me the opportunity, and if you have any questions. Hello?
Yes, we're still here.
Hello?
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you? Okay,
yes.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what type of clothing, Birth Clothing Company, I think that's just your name, and Born into Responsibility Through Heaven is just absolutely genius. And I do believe that it is from heaven. I want you to explain what type of clothing you have. And then I'd like for Mr. Kinsey to respond.
but I want to make an announcement right now. Now, and this has happened to us before. Just in case everybody shut down, something has happened on our end, and sometimes we're censored by this platform, and we have no idea what's going on, but we cannot see our controls, cannot see anything, and no, we don't see anything right now that we should be seeing technically. But all of your lines have been open. Every person on here, all your lines are open. I'm going to ask you to mute. If you're not speaking, we have no way of calling on any. I mean, I can call on you because I know you're here, but I, just in case we get totally cut off, there are certain topics that and certain things that, you know, we're not supposed to talk about. That, you know, I don't, that's not Dr. Lee, okay? I'm going to talk about, and our guests, we're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about, okay? And we are in search and looking at some new platform. And so we know that's going to happen very soon. So whoever's doing whatever, you can't stop us. We're not intimidated this way. You might try to do what you're doing, but let me serve notice to you, whoever you are. It's not going to work. It is not working, okay? So, and we know, just as you said, Mr. Leonard, that all the obstacles, everything that I put in our way is by design. It's by design. And whatever the heck is going on right now, I know that it's not an accident. We have full internet services right now, everything is working except for our show business right now, okay? So if you'd share with us, you know, what type of clothing you're making and, you know, how people can find you, and then I'd like for Mr. Marshawn to respond, and we're going to keep this conversation going. Okay, Mr. Leonard.
Yes, so we're currently, we have men's, we're specializing currently in menswear, urban streetwear. We have a women's line and also children's or kids' products too. So just t-shirts, jogging suits. We have some jackets and, you know, apparel and accessories. So it's an urban apparel brand. You can check us out at birthclothingco.com. That's Birth, BIRTH, clothingco.com. That's our web page. And like it's just, like I said, it's a variety of apparel and, you know, some pretty cool gear.
Thank you. So if we can ask, Mr. Marshawn, if you would respond. All this great, wonderful conversation. I love it. I love what you're doing, Mr. Leonard. And, you know, my son, you know, also was a young father at 19 and, you know, raised a daughter from about 10 months. And so, you know, so many things that all of us, so many of us can relate to. And this is a topic that has hit home. You know, it's been a part of my own life, and so certainly understand the challenges of young black fathers. I have a nephew right now who's been, had to raise three sons, still working on it, of course, in the middle of everything right now. One was cerebral palsy, you know, just left, you know, had to raise them every single day. And so my heart goes out. Everything and anything that Neighborhood Commerce Institute can do, Dr. Nerley Live Show can do, we are here. We are here to do it. We want these projects and programs to be of a high success. That's what this here is all about, to provide you with all of the resources that we understand that is available to help you to be a success. And so we're happy that you're on. We thank you. And please don't let this be the last time. So going to take us back to Mr. Marshawn.
Yes, I think that's amazing story, you know, and which your company, you know, the companies like you have are what we need to partner with our youth with and kind of create sort of licensing deal with your birth clothing company. So in a sense, this would allow them to come on, maybe design a sweater, maybe design a hat, maybe design shoes and stuff, but that creates a licensing deal where they go off, they start to make, and now they're utilizing that part. You know, a lot of times we go to these big major labels and do these things and try to get these licensing deals with a lot of these big major labels, but it's time that we start to invest into each other. You know what I'm saying? And start getting a license deal. You already got the work. You already got the website, things are up, and it's time for us to start utilizing that network. So, you know, we have a lot of room for a lot of different businesses. We just need our own swap meets, where it's just nothing. We got too many fashion designers to be buying everything from everybody else. So in a sense, it's kind of in a sense, we need our own swap meets that's set up in place. So designers like you have, you know, we can have a swap meet with 100 different designers in each swap meet in each city. And you know what I'm saying? And these designers come out every Friday, Monday through Sunday, however it is, but these are our designers where we go and we purchase. And that's a lot better because now we'll have more exclusive clothing, a more exclusive stuff that we'll have that nobody else can have, because a fashion designer can only make so much, a certain amount, but being able to show different designs and different things on a weekly basis. So we have a lot of little projects like that that we have in place to, again, create self-sufficiency within our community. And as we start to build that up, as you can see, like what's going on with the site and everything, that always comes in trigger. We can't move or try to get ourselves ahead without something happening or people getting a little bit envious or mad, because in our own country, we can't seem to get our act together. They always say, when you black people this and they won't do this, and then as soon as we start the conversation, they ain't ready to hear it. Now, we're not asking for no money. We're not in any way asking for you to help us. You know, like I try to tell the people, you know, in the times in the 1800s and in the 1700s, you had Ku Klux Klan and racists, and then you had what they called nigger lovers. And I think a lot of this generation didn't understand what a nigger lover was and what nigger lovers did and how they risked their life to help a nigger in this time. I'm just being straight out. You know what I'm saying? And that's what they were. They were nigger lovers. And so though they have descendants now, those same people who risked their lives against the Klan to make sure black people were able to do this, they have descendants. And their descendants are just like them. They're willing to risk their lives to make sure, man, we have what real freedom is. Like Muhammad Ali said, you know, white people are like snakes. I can't decide which one is poison and which one is not. Well, we can. By the efforts to work that they've already showed. It's nothing personal, but again, for us to kind of get into this active of this racism, we need to separate it so that we know where it is and we can have an internal conversation about what we need to do to move. It's not that we don't have economic development, that we can't create economic development. It has been stifled and stumped on every time, from Moulin Rouge to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all the other places they bombed and burned down, to every other thing that we created and they snatched in control. All of our culture, if you take all of our library of music and our catalog of music from Motown all the way to hip-hop, all the way from the disco, all that, put our catalog in this old category and put up everybody else's, our catalog is worth a lot. But we can't benefit off that, because when they see that, that's too much money for them to have. We can create our own, but the thing is, they can't see us do it because there's trillions going. We got to understand we bring in trillions. So when you talk about you want to turn that trillion around just to you, no, no, no. I don't know how you're going to do that. So what happens, you get tripped, they put their foot out. They'll tell you, oh, the black man's stupid, he's slow, but they don't show you when he tripped, when he tripped you. Every time we try to get ahead, they don't talk about the red line at the base there. They don't talk about...
Hello? Hello? Dr. Moncrief?
Yes, I'm
Hello?
Here.
Okay, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we lost our speaker.
Okay, so see, we can't see anything on our side. And so we have no idea. Tech doesn't know. We have no idea what's going on. We don't even know if this, since this has been happening, if we're going to even have this show recorded, if the recording is even taking place. But we're going to finish the conversation anyway. So hopefully when Mr. Marshawn, maybe he can get back in. I don't know. So. I'm going to ask you to go ahead, Dr. Moncrief.
Well, thank you. I was listening to Marshawn speak, and I had questions about those of us who've been incarcerated coming back into society and opportunities that the different programs that he works with had for people like that in terms of jobs, in terms of training. As far as I'm concerned, the criminal justice system today is a legal form of enslavement. You know,
It is.
Once you get into it, you are abused all the while you're there, and I don't even. You know, try to talk about who should and who shouldn't be there. I'm saying once you get into it, I don't care why you're there. It's a very abusive system. And then when you, it's hard enough when you haven't been incarcerated to as a descendant of an enslaved African to get an education and to get a career, a job, an opportunity. But once you've been incarcerated, it's you know, I'm not going to say impossible, but it becomes very, very hard to be successful. And so you need resources out there to help you get back into the mainstream. So I wanted Marshawn to talk about, you know, what kind of resources does he have that are available for people who are coming back and transitioning back into society. But unfortunately, he got knocked off.
So Marshawn, are you back? Marshawn, are you back? Okay, so this has happened to us before when we, remember you all, when we had the doctor who was on sharing her issues, the things that had happened to her under the COVID under the COVID topic. And so, you know, we've had this before when speakers were cut off. And so we are working on our own platforms and so that we can minimize this. So I say, I don't even know if we're being, if we're going to even have the show, the rest of this, you know, on tape or not. But we are going to finish. We will continue next week. We're going to ask if he's available to come back and where we can, you know, even if the, even the first part of it or the last part of the show might be dedicated. We tentatively do have a lineup for next week. We're working on confirming, but we don't want this to happen. We don't want this to happen, you know, with our topics and with our speakers. Dr. Long, Maybe I do want Judith, Sister Judith, to say more. If you're still here, Judith, I do know that if you're still here, you do need to go. But if you're still here, I would like for you to say something before you go. Judith? Okay. So she may be gone already. You know, as I said earlier,
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't hear the question. What did you say, Ms. Mary Lee?
Oh, I was just going to ask you to make any comments or remarks before you go tonight.
Oh, okay. I got cut off and I came back on again.
Oh, you were cut off?
Yes, wow. I did get cut off, and I tried to get back on like twice, but I did get back on, so yeah. It just cut
okay,
me off.
Great.
The only comment that I said, I just enjoy the show, and like I said, your shows are all hand, you make sure you give us the right information that we need from the people, and this is amazing. And I just want to say thank you, for having me on, and thank you for me giving, the opening statements, and I just, I'm just ecstatic, and, if anybody wants to check out our website on the restaurant in Quantico, it is www.thefamilyeatery.com, and we do catering, we do, everything else. If you have time, stop by, Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on, and thank the speakers for everything that, went forward.
Dr. Mirley, before she goes, can I ask her a question?
Yes.
How did she think of going to Conoco? How did she think of doing that? That's amazing.
Well, I know. Well, I knew some people that were there, and me and Ms. Mary Lee have been working for a long time. So we actually, put two and two together, and the chaplain that's in the Marine base, I spoke to him, and Ms. Mary Lee, I was supposed to give her his phone number, and we just took it from there, and the place was available, and he asked us what we wanted, and we went from there. And things happened so fast. It happened so fast. I don't know. Like Ms. Mary Lee said, we tried so many times to do things, and I got so frustrated and so aggravated, and I wanted to give up, but she kept telling me, no, it's going to work out, it's going to work out, and I'm like, yeah, okay. But, yeah, it just happened so fast, But I am so happy there. I'm very happy there. The Marines are amazing. They're wonderful people, and they watch out, they look out for you.
And see, God was, don't open certain doors or allow certain things to happen, because it wasn't our idea. I mean, this wasn't even dreamt of, right? I mean,
it wasn't. No,
it just kind of fell in. It just happened. It just fell in our laps while things were going on. And it, as Ms. Judith said, it just happened so fast. We were like, kind of felt like we were in a whirlwind. Pulling papers together.
I know. It was amazing. Yeah.
It really
That's
was.
I thank God
really
for
was.
You. Yeah.
And thank God for you.
But
for the opportunity to stay.
Yes, and Miss I forgot to tell you that we went up to 4.9 stars on Google.
Oh wow. That's awesome.
Yes, 4.9 stars. Yeah, so. Yeah,
that
thank
is
you.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome, honey.
Yeah, but that's it. That's what I want to say.
Dr. Moncrief, do you have any more questions of Judith before she goes?
I have tons, but
Well,
I have
she'll
tons,
be
but
back
I'm gonna
next week.
Not hog the mic.
She'll be back next week, opening up for us again. Anybody, as you know, we can't see you. So everyone's lines are open. So if anyone wants to speak before we get to, I do want Mr. Leonard to kind of give some final thoughts and remarks too. But before he does, and before Dr. Long does, I would like to ask if there's anyone else who wants to have something you want to say. Just speak out, control anything. We don't see you. We don't, nothing. They shut us off. Okay. So Mr. Leonard, and then Dr. Long, and then.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Yeah, so
yes.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak in regards to my brand and kind of share my story with you all, kind of like a similar story to a lot of males in the society. I really enjoyed the show. I was on for a few segments earlier on this year. I really enjoyed the dialogue. And like I said, just good energy, good food for thought, and I just appreciate, being a part of this. And I look forward to being on and sharing this platform with you guys in the future. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So Dr. Long, of course, tonight we won't be able to end our show as we usually do. So I guess we'll all hang up there. We won't be ending it how it typically ends. So I don't even know if when we all hang up, if what's going to happen. Dr. Long.
Thanks again, Dr. Lee, for all that you do and the invite to the show constantly. I want to thank Mr. Marshawn Kinsey for his efforts and everything he's doing to help the youth and just in general nation building among African Americans. And I'm happy that my nephew dealt with his anxiety and came on board to talk about his brand, because I actually believe his brand fit the whole concept in terms of what Mr. Kinsey's doing. And, to further encourage him to keep on at it. When he first came up with the brand, if he can be called, he had this heart logo, and then he changed it into some other logos, which he didn't really discuss, but I thought it draw the attention to different elements within the community, including one particular brand he has with this stork with this, what appears to be a cigar, yet got the attention of cannabis growers and users. So, but again, I thought the meaning was so important, and as he shared the story and the walk through the court system, but as I stated earlier, I love what I do, but one of the elements that I I'm not particularly fond of is when I have to do court-related child custody evals, as well as evaluations to the court associated with reunification. And, African Americans, we're not really we're not trusting in terms of the court system for, reasons as obvious as they are, and not having proper representation in terms of a legal defense, can lead to some very negative consequences. And there are a lot of stories that, at some point I'll share related to some of the agencies around the metropolitan Detroit area, that were directly associated with Mexican migrants and stuff who, you know, were put in those camps in California and everywhere else around Texas that, ironically, you know, kind of came right in the middle of that regarding children. But, again, I think the show was right on point. Again, Mr. Kinsey, his energy, for sure everybody can feel it over the radio waves. And I applaud him for all of his efforts and look forward to the next phase of the show. And, again, Dr. Mary Lee, I want to thank you, as well as I want to thank Dr. Cannon, especially my colleagues, Dr. Times, Dr. Moncrief, and the other ones, even Dr. Walter Davis. And special thanks to Jared for holding it down like he's been doing. So look forward to the next show, and everybody have a safe next 7 days. Thanks.
All right, now, thank you so very much. So I did receive a text from Mr. Marshawn, and he says that he's here, but it cannot speak. And so he's not getting through, he's not able to speak. And so we apologize for that tonight. And I just want to say I love you all, appreciate you all. We've had a great show tonight in spite of. We don't know what we got, what we don't got. And, but, you know, they're kicking us all around the place here. So thank you. I love you. Stay safe, everyone, over the next 7 days. And we will see you again here next week. God bless you all. Good night. Thank you for joining
us. Good night,
Miss
Mary.
Good night.
Good night.
Good
night. Good night.
Good night. Love you.
Good night.
Love you all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Oh, you're the baby.
Okay.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night.